You are listening to the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast with Bertie Corbett.
Welcome, everyone, and we welcome everyone back to Inside ECAC Hockey. Bernie Corbett, pleased to be back for another season with ECAC Hockey, and pleased to be back, have an opportunity to visit with coaches and players around the ECAC. First up for us this week, with teams returning to action last weekend, we're very happy to have with us the head coach of the St. Lawrence Skating Saints in his fifth season, I believe it is. Could it be possible? Time flying, I'm sure, up there in the North Country for Brent Brecky. Brent, welcome as we bring you in. And does it seem like it's been 5 years, or does it seem longer since you came in around the COVID time?
You know what? It's funny you say that, Bernie, but thanks first and foremost for having me on. Yeah, it doesn't seem like 5 years, but you look back and it seems like our COVID, that was the start, right? Our first year, we spent some time down the road at SUNY Canton as far as the using that rink when we were going through our renovations, and then everything shut down the playoffs, and the next year was the true COVID year. But all of that seems like it's so far back in the rearview mirror. But with that being said, it doesn't seem like it's been 5 years that we're heading into right now. So, but it's been fun. It's been enjoyable. It's a great place to be, and we're excited about our group as well.
Well, excitement factor, this being your fifth season, and the fact that I've been talking to coaches for decades, and when they get hired, it's always, what is your plan? You got a 3-year plan, you got a 5-year plan. That's usually dependent on what the contract is, I guess, right?
But yeah, there's no doubt that can change things.
that could be, you could maybe call a couple of audibles at the line of scrimmage or from the bench, as it were, in hockey. But as you look at it and the progress of this program, the win totals from 4-6 with an asterisk with the 6, because there was a 6-8 season with the COVID shortened season, to 11-17. I mean, it's been a pretty steady climb up uphill there as far as the progress of this program. How do you see it now, year 5?
No, I like it. Obviously, we took a real good step last year. We finished the season kind of on a disappointing note when we earned the home ice to play at home, but lost that series with Colgate. And credit to them, Donnie Vaughn did a phenomenal job getting them clicking at the right time, and eventually he won the playoff, for last year. So probably the wrong team to draw. We had some great battles all year long, but the season as a whole was good. But when you have a disappointing last series to finish it off, that kind of sticks with you through the summer. But I think with that was a real motivational side for, our entire program, not just our staff, but our players. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that went into some soul searching this summer to make sure that doesn't happen again, but to earn that right to be back in the same position, but then make the most of it and get ourselves a Lake Placid this year. And that's the goal.
You mentioned the fourth place finish, 12-10 in a very competitive ECAC last year. And then that disappointment, oftentimes coaches, it becomes something that's tangible. You can almost feel it around the returnees of the team. Is that something that you could really kind of get a feel for, that there was a strong motivation for your returning core of this team, the veteran group of this team, coming back to erase that, make amends, and be able to move forward?
Yeah, their mindset is noticeable, and it was from day one. And when I say day one, that's the start of the school year, but really it happened back in the spring. We do a lot of stuff in the summer and the off season to stay connected with our guys and kind of get our acclimation for our young guys coming in place as well. So we do a lot of stuff on Zoom in the summer, and it was noticeable, obviously leading up to the kickoff of the first day of classes. It's just a different mindset. There is a focus there. There's a really a true not wanting to be denied, especially for the older guys that are in there last year. And we do have an older group. But we just, we had a meeting here this morning after practice just with our captains, our advisory group. And, just some of the things we went through in game one, just as far as how the third period kind of went back and forth and how that was managed, on the bench between the periods in the locker room and different things like that, of not getting too high with the highs or too lows with the lows. And, the experience is really what plays into that. They've been through it before, and they understand, hey, these are some of the things that we did well when we were, faced with this type of adversity within a game last couple of years, or maybe it was, things that weren't going well or going great either way, but keeping things in perspective and not letting things get away from you in a game, because that can happen real quick. And, RIT was a real good matchup for us. I like their team a lot. I think they're excellent in transition. So it was a good test right from the start, which we knew it was going to be, because they're always a little bit older and they play a high, fast tempo game and up speed with transition. So that was a good test for us to get prepared prepared for the kickoff, the start of the season.
And the start of the season is successful. As you mentioned, start with the 4-3 victory over RIT, and got some great contributions there in terms of offensively. Bergen with a couple of goals, Missouri with a 3-point night, and also a contribution. I'm not going to attempt the pronunciation, but you do have a young Latvian man there on the team that got a big goal for you.
Yeah, it's Felix Gavers. Yes.
Gavers. Okay.
He's a shooting machine. The thing we talked to him about, and he's fun. He's a high energy kid. No bad days with that kid being around the rink, but he can shoot the puck a ton and he can really skate. And we just said, hey, you should be attempting, eight shots a night. You get 8 shots on net, you're going to score a lot of goals because he's got the ability to get the puck off quick. He's got a lot on it. I think it gets on top of goaltenders quickly and surprises them where, if he's not scoring himself, he's probably creating a second and third opportunity just because it's just one of those shots that it's quick, it's hard, it's heavy, and it's tough to handle. So it was great to see him score early, and obviously he was pretty excited about it. And then Ben Cross played well in net, and that was the other thing coming into the year with not much experience. We lost Emil Zetterquist, who had been our mainstay for the last 2+ years, and he was great for us. And when that torch has got to be passed to somebody else, there's a little uncertainty. But we've got some great competition in net with Grant Adams and Ben Cross, and then Mason Kaczynski. So Ben got the call the first night, and did a tremendous job, made some huge saves when we needed to at the timely points of the game. So it was good to kind of get some answers in net as well.
You mentioned about Ben, experience at Arizona State and Miami before coming up there to the North Country. And you look for that progress, Coach. Guys that do return, Bergen, he got half his goal total from a year ago. He had 4, and Missouri had 3. He's already on the score sheet. Gavaris had 3 a year ago, and I'm sure you're looking to see those totals be able to creep up for you and increase the production and the overall balance for your team offensively.
Yeah. The one thing I thought we did a real good job last year, the challenge we put forth with our team was we needed more scoring on our back end from our defensemen. And I thought they answered the bell last year. If you look at the numbers from previous years to last year, they did a phenomenal job. And now when the season ends, you're going, geez, our offense from our forwards needs to elevate. And so that's kind of been the challenge. Obviously, you continue to take a step with our defensemen and maintain where we're at, but another small step offensively from the blue line, but then do that same thing up front. And our guys, I think the experience that they've gotten the last couple of years now as an older group is starting to show through. We're making a lot more plays. There's a lot more offensive confidence, just more threatful. And another young man that didn't have a huge showing on the score sheet, but was dynamic from start to finish for us was Tyler Crystal. And TC's been a guy that as a young man, as a first year, we knew he was going to be very dynamic, but he's taken a really, really good step here from year one to year two. And he should have a real big season for us.
Indeed, Crystal with 13 points a year ago, and a guy that I know that you're expecting to step up. And once again, it's been Lastic also, who had a pretty good offensive start for you last year with 15 points. So that freshman to sophomore class is going to be one to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And the sophomore year is always the challenging one. It's funny. I think you probably, every coach probably thinks the same way. You always hear the term, the sophomore
jinx.
The reality is it's expectations is what it all comes down to. When you come in as a first year player, you probably have your own expectations, but you're stepping into college hockey for the first time, and it's a different animal. You're playing against men, a lot older guys that bigger, stronger. And as a coach, you probably have some expectations, what you think they may do. But until they get there, you don't really truly know. But once they've gone through a full year, now there's true expectations. You know what they're capable of, and you know what the standard should be for them. But then they also feel the same way. They know what college hockey is. And so what happens a lot of time is those first-year players think they've got it figured out. They get the end of year one. Hey, I've been through a year. I get it. But the reality is that expectation gets raised probably from a coaching standpoint. And from a player standpoint, they think they've got it, figured out, and they've been through it. And all of a sudden the expectation is raised a little bit when they go into year two, and it's harder. You're not sneaking up on anybody. Everybody knows who you are as a player. There's pre-scouts and things like that. And all of a sudden It's not as easy as you thought it was going to be. And the expectation continues to be raised probably from a coaching standpoint. And that's the challenge, is to try to live up to that as a player. And that's where a lot of times I think that pressure in that year two for certain individuals can be a real tough thing. But, I think our young guys that are coming from year one to year two have really, they look tremendous to start the year. And now we get into games that'll really kind of play itself out and show that they're ready for that.
And you alluded to the defense and the offensive contribution of the defense, and that is factored into you having 85% of your goals returning from a year ago, and that's only matched by Alaska Anchorage. So you're number one in that area. And I think even more importantly is just the overall core group of your defensemen led by Luke Salem. Give us a little bit of insight about him. He's a captain, all ECAC, and led the team across the board from the blue line. Had an outstanding year, just – really impactful all around, plus 11, had four game winners for you as a defenseman. And oh, by the way, not afraid of doing the dirty work there as he blocked 45 shots to lead an experienced defense corps that you just can't discount.
No doubt. He had a tremendous year, and you'll appreciate the movie Cool Hand Luke. That would be him. Like his
one of my favorites.
His pulse might get to about 110 during a game. He's about as even keel as they get. But that's what makes him special. There's no panic in his game. You know, he doesn't, like we talked about at the start of this, and it's not too high with the highs, and he doesn't get too down on himself. And he's got a demeanor that is infectious for our guys on the bench and in the locker room when things kind of get anxious and maybe transition goes the other way. And all of a sudden you feel like things are slipping away a little bit. He's just that guy that he's very quiet. And so when he does speak, he has the ear of everybody. And I mean everybody. They're like, hey, when he's talking, it's thoughtful. It's very meaningful. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of merit to what's coming out of his mouth. And so he's got that presence to him that – and he's almost bashful to a certain degree. And but he's got an inner confidence that really kind of shows through with his play that – when the game's on the line and plays need to be made, he's going to do it. And he's a special player, obviously, but he's a special kid. I mean, that's just the way he's wired. He's just an awesome, awesome person that, you know, you just want to be around every single day.
And Waite and Nakins were also pretty good contributors, all three zones with what they did to impact the game offensively for a year ago.
Yeah, two big kids. They're best friends, both kids from Winnipeg. And Drake Bergen's in that mix. The three of those kids are all from the Peg, as they call it. And but yep. Mason's, he and Ty Nakins are big bodies. They're big, heavy players. A lot of poise in their game, and they're tough to play against, you know, both with and without the puck. And they play the game the right way. And, they had good years. And I, the same thing, their own expectations, I think, match what it is, you know, within our coaching staff. Is there's some really high expectations. Those are guys with a high ceiling and a bright future in hockey after college as well. And so we're pretty excited for them as well this year.
And I got to make note of the fact that of your freshman class of seven to replace the eight members of the class of 2023, I noticed the name Jake Lammons, the son of St. Lawrence icon, legend, Hank Lammons, that I remember very well, All-American in class of 87.
Yeah, his father was an absolute ball player here. He was a big time player, and he's he was a Olympic sailor as well for Team Canada. Like he's talk about an athlete. His dad is still an athlete.
Yep,
he's a big man. But yeah, Jake's. It's great to have a legacy when you come in, and at times it's not fair. You know, when you have a parent that's been that successful as a former athlete in the same sport. But Jake's a talented young man. He's actually coming off of surgery. So we're still trying to get him healthy from some off-season surgery. But he's an exciting young defenseman that he's got good skating ability, good hockey sense, good compete. And so we're looking forward to getting him healthy and in the lineup.
And good to see that you handled adversity on night one, Coach, with RIT battling back and making that a one-shot game a couple of times. You handle it from that standpoint. And special teams, always a work in progress in October, let alone later in the year, but especially early in the year. And you won that battle. You were perfect on the PK and had a timely power play goal.
And that's the credit to our assistant coaches. So Tommy Hill is in charge of our penalty kill, and he's done a phenomenal job with that group every single year. And Mike Akins came on board with us last year our power play. And, he's done a really good job of just changing things into some different looks and different units and things like that. But the confidence is high. I think our guys are making better reads and executing at a higher level. So, yeah, they made a difference in that game. And that was one of the things we talked about, going into the game is, we want to be great on faceoffs. You get a faceoff goal, it gives an opportunity to make a difference. We have a kind of a broken play from a faceoff that ended up in that, but then the special teams at the end of the day are going to win a lot of hockey games for you. You know, whether you're keeping the puck out of your net or putting it in the opponent's net, and our guys answered the bell with that. So it was great to see.
And you mentioned about Mike Akins was added to the staff last year and a new assistant coach with the NCAA, allowing for another coach to be hired. And like many schools, you went in the direction of goaltending with Cam Dumais, who had a great experience with stop at goaltending here in Boston area where I reside, and also at Bentley.
Yeah, Cam's a great young man. And that was the one thing we, you know, in having that position, because our previous goalie coach was a volunteer. Mike McKenna is a former goalie here at St. Lawrence, but he was doing it remote. And so he wasn't hands-on with our guys the previous couple of years as a volunteer. It was all through Zooms and stuff, which he did a phenomenal, phenomenal job with our guys from afar. But to get that position in-house, to have somebody, you know, on the ice with us with the, you know, the new allocation from the NCAA to get Cam was great. And Cam's got a, you know, he's got a real deep history with Brian DeCord, and Brian's, you know, phenomenal. He's a well-known mm-hmm. goalie guru. And so, you know, being under Brian's watch for the last 7 years, you know, we felt very confident that Cam's the great guy to come in, and he's been tremendous. You know, it's different because he was working solely with goalies, but now you start adding the recruiting aspect in there and the system stuff and things like that. But Cam's been tremendous. He's a great young coach. He's high energy. He's diligent and working. So obviously we're pretty excited adding him to our staff.
And with five of your first six at home, I love the fact that it's not the Mosh Pit, it's the Mosh Pit. Of course it is, with in honor of one of my good friends, Joe Marsh. But a chance to get out of the gate strong. And want to mention it was a whiteout night. I read a little bit about what Elaine White, 60-year employee at St. Lawrence. I'm sure she was thrilled to be honored by the crowd and your Skating Saints hockey team, and to get off with a big W.
Yeah, it was great to recognize Elaine. 60 years at an institution is incredible. And I mean incredible. That's probably an understatement still. But it was great to see the recognition for her. And you know, the place was sold out and they all had the T-shirts on honoring her, which was great. But going back to like Joe Marsh, I mean, Joe's awesome. And Bernie, you know him well over the years. But so when we first asked Coach Marsh, hey, do you mind if we, you know, rename the student section after you? And we told him, because with his strong Eastern accent, we said, well, when you say Joe Marsh, it comes Joe across Marsh. As mosh. He said, so it's like a mosh pit. He goes, well, what the hell's a mosh pit? And so we're like, Coach, you got to look it up. But it's a high energy place of you know, lots of people getting in the energy and excited into things. And so he was like, sure, if you think it's something, we'll run with it. So, but yeah, he had no clue what a mosh pit was. So, but it's great to have him honored and recognized, obviously, in Appleton with the student section, because he did so much for the program for, you know, close to three decades. And he comes back. He lives here in the winter. He's one of the few retirees that doesn't go south. He loves the cold weather, so he's in Maine in the summer, and then he comes here in the winter, and he's here around a lot, and he's awesome. He's a special person.
Yeah, great to have his presence. It's infectious. His energy level. God bless him, Joe Marsh. And next up, you got the couple of non-conference opponents: Vermont from Hockey East and Penn State from the Big Ten. Just give us a little bit of a glimpse into the weekend, the week ahead here for your Skating Saints.
Yeah, it's a great matchup coming up. I mean, like I said, I like the challenge that we had facing RIT, because they were a threatful offensive team. And I think we're going to see similar with both the two other teams coming in, with Vermont on Friday and Penn State on Saturday. Both, I think, similar. Like they're going to play north. They play quick. They're good skating teams. Mm-hmm. They're going to make a lot of plays. Obviously, Steve Wheeler taking over at Vermont. You know, he's got a real offensive-minded offensive mindset and kind of his background. So I would expect those guys to be really kind of looking to go north a lot and make a lot of plays with the puck. And then Penn State is a team that obviously can really skate, and they shoot the puck from everywhere. And if you're not good around your net, you know, you may give them the outside shot, but they come to the net hard and they're looking for second, third, and fourth opportunities off a lot of line rushes or forced pucks in zone. So, you know, we're going to have to be on our toes with good awareness and get our feet moving against both those teams this weekend.
Coach, thank you very much. As always, it's great to talk hockey with you here on the program. And my only words of advice is just tell your captain, Luke, that nothing can be a real cool hand.
there you go. I will pass it along, Bernie. How about you, Bernie? Any special concerts this past summer? I know you're an avid concert guy.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it was a year ago, it was the Stones at Hyde Park and Wimbledon. And this year it was Bruce Springsteen at Hyde Park and Wimbledon. Wow. So that was certainly a highlight. And and also I got to see a couple of Pearl Jam shows just a couple of weeks ago in Chicago.
Good for you. That's a great summer. Good for you.
Absolutely. Got to keep rocking in the free world, Brent.
There you go. Exactly.
Okay. Excellent. Great to have you with us. All the best this weekend and skating beyond with the Skating Saints this season. Hope to be talking hockey again.
Awesome. Thanks, Brent. I appreciate the time. Have a great one.
Brent Brecky, head coach of the St. Lawrence Skating Saints, our guest here this week on Inside ECAC Hockey. Well, welcome back, everyone, to Inside ECAC Hockey. And this week in our alumni segment, if you will, ECAC alumni. We'll be exploring all season long here on Inside ECAC Hockey. And we're going to get started here with a very prominent ECAC alum, an outstanding career for the Clarkson Golden Knights, playing for Jerry York, the all-time winningest coach in the history of college hockey and a Hall of Famer. And he is an icon of not only Clarkson hockey at the collegiate level, but at the NHL level with his career with the Los Angeles Kings, both as a player and then as general manager, administrator, and then on to the St. Louis Blues, where he finally had a chance after four decades to hoist the Stanley Cup. We'll be talking about that and some other subjects here with our guest, Dave Taylor. Dave, welcome, almost welcome back since we had a chance to talk this summer on my Games People Play show. It's great to reconnect with you again.
Well, thank you, Bernie. Good to be on with you again.
Looking back, Dave, your experience with college hockey and coming to college hockey, growing up in a small town, mining town in Ontario, and the opportunity to come to the States and to play college hockey, just to give us some insight and perspective as to how all that came about.
Well, it goes back 50 years, Bernie. It goes back 1973. I grew up in Levack, Ontario. It's a small mining town about 30 miles northwest of Sudbury, Ontario. And that would be about a five-hour drive north of Toronto. So I played all my minor hockey in Levack and right up through midgets. And I was looking for an opportunity to go to school. I hadn't been drafted by major junior in Canada. So I played a year of junior B in my hometown of Levack. They had just started a league up there. And I was going to grade 13, which is the last year of high school, kind of a prep year for university in Canada. And February of 1973, we just finished the game in Levack, and the coach came in, Coach Bob Parker, and said to me, there's a coach here from Clarkson wanted to talk to you. So I went out in the lobby, and that's the first time I got to meet Jerry York. And you know, I was a late bloomer. I think at that time I was probably 5'9", 130 pounds. But I'd like to think I was a pretty good player, and I was a leading scorer in the junior B league. And when I met Jerry out in the lobby, he said, I'd like to come over to your house and talk to your mom and dad about you coming down to Clarkson. And so that's how the whole story started. Jerry came over to the house, and my brother actually ran home to let my parents know that that the coach was coming over. And he had a little pop-up video. He talked about Clarkson. He showed us a video. They showed the campus, showed the hockey rink, showed the locker room where everything was so well organized. And that was the start of it. I think he made his presentation. We had a few questions. And then Jerry said to my dad, Mr. Taylor, what do you think? And my dad said, I'd love for my son to get an education. And the two of them shook hands, and I was on my way to Clarkson in the fall.
Indeed, on your way. And you mentioned about your prowess growing up and coming through it at the junior level. Wanted to make note of the fact that you beat out a guy named Gail McCourt, league scoring title, became the first overall pick in the 1977 NHL draft. So you were competing at a very high level and making a name for yourself as a very productive offensive player at that time before Clarkson.
Well, that was the interesting part of it. They just started this junior B league up in that area. Major junior hockey had just come to Sudbury. And the year that I played junior B, which was the 72-73 season, Randy Carlisle played in Azilda, Ron Duguay played out in Valley East, and Dale McCourt played games for Coniston. Those guys were a couple years younger than me, but they were playing up, and they eventually all played major junior before moving on to the NHL. But it was a very good league, and, you know, travel wasn't too bad. And, you know, it was an opportunity for me to be seen and to have the opportunity with Jerry to go down to Clarkson.
And down to Clarkson, and boy, the rest is history with your achievements at Clarkson over the course of your career. Just to put it in perspective, from a statistical standpoint, 116 career games, 251 career points, 98 goals, 153 assists for that total. And your ECAC Player of the Year, 1977. A season, by the way, to put it in perspective for all of you fans currently of college hockey, the man that we're talking to had 108 points in 1977 with 41 goals. He added 67 assists. Remarkable, the productivity at your for your career at Clarkson. Played on some great teams at Clarkson. You think back during those days, part of Jerry York's very first recruiting class, and some of the memories that immediately come to mind about competing in the ECAC and competing there in the hockey hotbed of the North Country at Clarkson with the great rivalry with St. Lawrence.
Yeah, well, I have to pinch myself every so often. I mean, I thought I might be working in the mine. And when Jerry York showed up and offered me the opportunity to go to Clarkson, I mean, I absolutely loved it. We didn't have a great team my freshman year. As you mentioned, was part of Jerry's first recruiting class in 1973. He had just taken over for Lenny Siglarski. Lenny had gone down to Boston College to coach, and Jerry became the head coach up at Clarkson with Bill O'Flaherty as his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
But the first year, we actually missed the playoffs. Back then, the ECAC was just one league. Hockey East hadn't split off yet. I don't know how many teams there were my first year. I know my senior year, there were 17 teams, and the top eight would...
That's right.
Yeah, so the top eight would make the playoffs. And we ended up, I think, finishing ninth or 10th. We just missed the playoffs. And that's the first time in like 25 years a Clarkson team had not made the playoffs. So it was pretty disappointing, but we vowed to be better. And we seemed to get better each year. And by the time I was a senior and I had a chance to grow a little bit and get a little stronger, we actually finished first in the league. So we had the number one seed for the first round of the playoffs and then to go down to the Boston Garden. But I absolutely love my time at Clarkson. When you played up there, I mean, it's a small village of Potsdam, and really the whole village is very, very supportive of the hockey program and of Clarkson University. And our nearest rival would be St. Lawrence, 9 or 10 miles down the road. We had some great games with St. Lawrence. When I was there, we had some real good fortune against them. I think we lost once when I was a freshman. And I broke my collarbone over there at St. Lawrence. So that's not a good memory for me. But the other 4 years were absolutely terrific. And I think Jerry York was so much ahead of his time. I mean, you know, this is the early 70s coming into the mid 70s, and the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers are winning Stanley Cups. And there's a lot of emphasis on size and having some toughness in your lineups. And, you know, Jerry was very focused on speed and skill. And that you mentioned my senior year, when I had the 108 points, we had an outstanding power play. I saw some stats on it probably last year. I think it's the number one ranked power play in ECAC history. We were 42% on the power play. So that's why we had so many points, and that's why we were able to score so many goals. But Jerry did a great job, as did Bill O'Flaherty as our coaches.
And that, boy, that power play, I could close my eyes and envision you playing against Boston University with that power play. Bill Blackwood was an All-American in defense. Oh, by the way, he had 71 points as a defenseman. You had Kevin Zappia, who was a great trigger guy on the power play. The skill level, the talent level on the ice was just outstanding.
Yeah, that number one power play unit had Bill Blackwood and Murray Wright on defense. Marty McNally was the center that would work down low. I was on my off wing, and Kevin Zappia was off that far post. And he's Clarkson's all-time scorer as far as goals are concerned. I think 102 or 103 goals in his career. Kevin just had a knack around the net, and he would pay the price to get in there in tight, and he could finish. As you mentioned, Bill Blackwood was a threat to score from the blue line, had a wicked shot. He could really shoot it, and he could make plays as well. Had mobility to move laterally on the blue line, so he could find seams to get the puck through. And Marty McNally was real quick and a great playmaker. He would work off the near post and kind of pop out for a shot or move it across the zap or back to Billy Blackwood. So yeah, that power play was a lot of fun to be part of, and that was a great year for us up at Clarkson.
And you told it to me during the summer, the draft story for everybody out there, once again, of the modern age, and draft is showcased, it's televised, social media, families sitting around gathering, waiting for the selection with the cameras. Your draft story is a little bit different to find out how you were drafted.
Yeah.
I was drafted
as a 19-year-old. It was actually after my sophomore year at Clarkson. The Kings drafted me, and they drafted me in the 15th round and 210th selection. but I was home in Labac. I was actually, during the summer, I had a student job, and I would work underground in the mine. I had an idea that the draft was going on, but I hadn't really thought about it much. But the day after the draft, I got a call from my sister, Linda, who works at the credit union in Labac. And she was in the office, and one of her coworkers had gotten the Toronto Star and was going through the draft list, and says to her, "Linda, where does your brother go to school?" She goes, "He goes to Clarkson." He says, "We got drafted yesterday by the LA Kings in the 15th round." So that's how I found out about the draft. My sister called the house. My dad actually answered the phone, and he said, "You were drafted by the LA Kings yesterday in the draft." So, just to have that opportunity, I think, meant a lot to me. They actually drafted Bob Shaw. I was drafted in the 15th round. Bob Shaw was one of my classmates at Clarkson. He was taken in the 16th round. Mm-hmm. And back then there was no limit on the number of rounds. They would draft until every team in the National Hockey League passed, then the draft would be over. But I have to give the credit there to the King scout, Alex Smart. He lived up in Ottawa, and he came to a lot of games down at St. Lawrence, down at Clarkson. It was about an hour and a half or 2 hour drive probably back then for him. And he took a liking to me, I think, and he finally convinced the Kings to take me late in the draft in 1975. And 9 years later, just a little bit of a side note to that, he also convinced the Kings to draft Luke Robitaille out of Hull or out of Gatineau in the ninth round. And Luke turned out to be a pretty good player for the Kings as well.
Not bad. There's two good selections. And on to the Kings and an iconic 17-year career. And you remain as amongst all former NCAA players that played in the NHL, the all-time scorer with 1,069 points. You played over 1,000 games, over 1,000 points, and got a reference the Triple Crown line that you were part of. It's we live in a different era in terms of lines, and lines that are identifiable has changed a little bit. A lot of times you got pairs that are paired up with somebody, but that was truly one of the best and once again, legendary lines of all time that you were part of with Marcel Dion and Charlie Sommer during your Kings career.
Yeah, no question. I think when I first went to the Kings in 77, I actually went for a tryout. The Kings were sharing a farm team with the Islanders in Fort Worth, Texas. So I went down on the March break, and the Kings didn't want to sign me right away. They weren't sure if I was big enough or skated well enough. You know, it didn't seem like there was a lot of respect for the college player back then, despite the season that we had had at Clarkson when I was a senior. But so I went down there for 7 games, and I thought I played pretty well. They still wanted me to come to training camp without a contract. But this was a time when the World Hockey was still activated, was still operating and was an option for players. So Art Kaminsky was my agent at the time, and we got a contract offer from Cincinnati for a 1-year deal. And I was going to take that if I couldn't get a contract from the Kings. So Art went back to the Kings and said, listen, the kid would really like to play in the National Hockey League. So the Kings eventually signed me in the summer. But I think as a 15th round draft choice, there wasn't a lot of expectations of me making the team. But I did everything I could through training camp. I was leading every skating rush. I pretty much scored in every scrimmage. And they kept me with the team to start the year. And I was playing on the fourth line, maybe getting 1 or 2 shifts a period. And then it was probably a few months into the year. I think it was actually January. We were out on the road. The coach, Ron Stewart, tried me on a line with Marcel Dion. And that we seemed to click and have some chemistry. And that was a huge break for me as a hockey player. And I ended up playing pretty much 9 years as Marcel's right winger. And we had a lot of success. And January of the following year, Bob Berry was now the coach of the Kings, and he had played with Charlie Simmer down in Springfield the year before. And he recalled Charlie to play on left wing with Marcel and I, and that was the birth of the Triple Crown line. And that was a great time for me. I mean, everybody loves to score goals. We were very productive. Charlie had back-to-back, I think, 56 goal seasons. Wow. We were the first line in NHL history where all three members of the line had over 100 points, and just a magical time for us as players. So I look back on those days fondly.
Oh, indeed. And then after your 17-year playing career spent entirely with the LA Kings, you were on to administrative responsibilities, which included becoming the winningest general manager in the history of the LA Kings franchise. And still, the Stanley Cup, Dave, was that elusive prize, the holy grail of hockey. And that finally came full circle for you as a member of another organization. And just to give us some perspective about what a moment that was for you, just 4 years ago in 2019, as a member of the St. Louis Blues organization, to be able to hoist that Stanley Cup.
Right. Well, it was, I mean, that's it. Everybody's dream, I think, is to win the Stanley Cup when you start out playing. I mean, I was 5 years old when I started to play hockey up in Levesque, and my dream was, you know, one day to win the Stanley Cup and have the opportunity to play in the National Hockey League. When I was a general manager, and I actually hired Bill O'Flaherty from Clarkson.
Yes.
He was the athletic director at that time, had been assistant coach when I was there, then a head coach, and then the athletic director. He was our director of player personnel. So we worked together. I mean, we didn't win the cup with the Kings, but we like to think that we put some of the key pieces in place there. I mean, we had drafted players like Dustin Brown and Anje Kopitar and Jonathan Quick, who went on to be key pieces of those 2 Stanley Cups with the Kings. So we take a little pride in helping those guys climb the mountain, so to speak. And then when I left the Kings, I worked for Doug Armstrong. I actually went to Dallas for 3 years with Doug. And then when Doug went over to St. Louis, I joined them there. And, you know, when we had a absolutely magical run there in 2019. We were in last place, I think, in January, and we recalled Jordan Binnington from the minors, and our team went on a run at that point and just about won our division. We missed, I think, by 2 points winning our division, and then went through the Stanley Cup playoffs, played the Boston Bruins, won Game 7 in Boston to win the Stanley Cup. And the first Stanley Cup in Blues history, which took them 52 years, and the first Stanley Cup for myself, and have an opportunity to raise it over my head on the ice there in Boston, took me 42 years. So it took a while to reach that. But, you know, you got to have some perseverance, and you got to stay with it, and you got to believe. And that's how things went for me. So, you know, I look at some of the highlights that I had. Certainly as a player with the Kings, we won a game 7 in Toronto back in 1993 and played the Montreal Canadiens in the Stanley Cup final. We ended up losing that series in 5, and it's the last time a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. But then, you know, as far as management, I mean, the opportunity to win the Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues was a real highlight for me.
No question. And from the humble beginnings of the mining town of Levac, and just the opportunity, as you look back, Dave, to have the opportunity to come to the United States to get an education and to play for an organization as you did for a university, as you did at Clarkson, and for the opportunity to play for Jerry York. And you mentioned about Bill O'Flaherty and the connections that came through Clarkson that carried you right through your career as a player, as an administrator, and right to the present day with the friendships that you had that all rooted right back to Potsdam, New York.
Well, no question about that, Bernie. I mean, we're still great friends today. I mean, I get a lot of texts from Bill O'Flaherty and from Jerry York. So we stay in touch. And, you know, they made such a huge impact in my life. And having the opportunity to go to Clarkson, I mean, I was a late bloomer, as I said earlier. You know, if you're 130 pounds and you're heading off to college, you yep. know. But fortunately, I grew about 3 inches. And that environment in college where you play 30 or 35 games a year, and you have the rest of the week to train and to work out, and the facilities that the schools have today are absolutely beautiful. I was up at Clarkson. They've redone the whole downstairs of the men's and the women's locker rooms, the weight rooms down there. I mean, the whole thing's absolutely beautiful. So, you know, to have that opportunity and to spend 4 years there, I often say that the best 4 years of my life were the 4 years that I spent up in Potsdam going to Clarkson. And, you know, I got to play for great people. I got to improve as a player. I got an education, which is what my dad wanted me to have when he first spoke to Jerry York. So, I mean, I think that college, I mean, the game continues to grow. We see more schools starting programs, more schools building new arenas. I mean, the facilities, the coaching, everything is so first class, I guess, these days. And, you know, it's a great opportunity. I often tell kids, if you have an opportunity to combine what you love with an education, whether it's to play baseball on a scholarship or a hockey scholarship, I mean, what an outstanding 4 years you could enjoy there.
Indeed. And you've been active, I know, with Clarkson. You're one time athletic advisory, and also as a trustee at Clarkson over the time since you left.
Yeah, I have a very close relationship there. I talk to Casey Jones quite often, the head coach up there. And, you know, we follow the hockey program closely. We had a split out in Notre Dame last weekend. So looking for a good year from the Golden Knights. And they've been so good to me over the years that I like to give back a little bit if I can.
Absolutely. We've given back quite a bit. And Dave, we want to thank you for joining us here on Inside ECAC Hockey. And as we talked about over the summer on Games People Play, we hope that that call will come from Toronto one day.
You never know, Bernie. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Dave Taylor, one of the all-time greats in ECAC hockey history, the Clarkson Golden Knights, and then on to the LA Kings and on to the Stanley Cup of the St. Louis Blues. Our guest here this week in our alumni segment on Inside ECAC Hockey. Welcome back, everyone, to this week's episode of Inside ECAC Hockey. Coaches are on board with us this week on the men's and now on the women's side, as we're very pleased to welcome the head coach of the Colgate Raiders, 11th season for Greg Fargo. Greg, welcome to the show. It's been a while since we talked. It's great to reconnect.
Yeah, it has been, Bernie. It's great to hear your voice again and to be chatting about ECAC hockey. Thanks for having me.
on a sharp contrast to my family, it's great that you hear my voice. Okay, I'll let it go with that. At any rate, Craig, it's been quite a run for you. When you look at now, you're in your 11th season. The record is noteworthy, and I will note it, with 6 20 win seasons, the 4 NCAA tournament appearances. And last year, I guess, well, you know, most coaches say last season's a canceled check, but the check was for a pretty big number. So we want to reference the fact that with 32 wins last year, 18 in the uber competitive ECAC women's side, and the fact that you won the ECAC championship for the third year in a row. And now know that no team has been able to do that 4 times in a row, and did it once again. In the ECAC, where there's plenty of danger out there. I think one of the most noteworthy things, as you look back on everything you accomplished, you defeated 9 ranked teams last season. I mean, that is going against the iron night in and night out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, what comes to mind, Bernie, is a lot of those 9 ranked teams that you mentioned were right here in our backyard, you know, mm-hmm. playing other really quality teams here in ECAC. And you know, we talk about it as coaches all the time, just how competitive this league has been really, since my arrival 11 years ago. You know, there hasn't been a year that, gets any easier. That's for sure. It gets stronger and stronger with every passing season. And last year was no exception to that. You know, we felt going into the tournament and certainly through the playoffs, so we were really well battle tested. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we're playing, you know, great quality opponents every single night and in this league, and certainly makes for some great hockey all season long, but especially down the stretch in the second half of the year when it comes playoff time. You know, the margins are really tight, and to get to the end, as we've been fortunate enough to do, we felt strong that, you know, we were playing some good hockey and beating some good teams, you know, heading down deep into the playoffs.
No doubt about that. And I know that the sights are set. Once again, the goals are very high for this season. And why wouldn't it be when anybody takes a look and does a little research, as I've done on your roster, that GR is prevalent on the roster. This yeah. is a veteran team. Just to take us through, first of all, a team that offensively last year, you had 5 players with 35-plus points, 6 players that had attained some type of ECAC All-League All-Star recognition. But to begin on the offensive side, it seems like there's depth, and teams are going to have a lot of difficulty in being able to concentrate or zero in to be able to stop one player or one line. Although one name does come to mind when you consider your captain is back as a fifth-year grad who led the nation in points per game.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. I'd be lying to you if I said otherwise. I mean, to have Danielle back as a fifth-year player, our captain, returning leading scorer, obviously, and she had a heck of a season last year leading the country in points. But, you know, it goes beyond Danielle, as you alluded to. You know, we're fortunate enough to have 4 of our returning fifth-year players. And I think anytime you can add a fifth-year player to your roster or keep a fifth-year player, in our case, you know, it not only helps you on the ice, but just in terms of leadership, Bernie, as you know, how important that is. You know, their experiences, they've been through a lot here at Colgate, as you mentioned, both winning championships, but also, you know, navigating the ups and downs of what you go through as a college athlete. And I think having that experience in our locker room, you know, it goes a long way when you're trying to help the younger players acclimate to the college setting and the college game. And, you know, we're just so fortunate to have more of a veteran group this year, more so than we have in the last few years. And, you know, the neat thing about it is, as much success as they've had throughout their career, there's still a lot of, there's a lot of meat left on that bone for them to want to get to and accomplish. And so by no means, you know, as this group of upperclassmen settled in on their laurels and what they've done in the past, they've got their sights set for, you know, to do things here at Colgate that haven't been done quite yet.
Yeah, I imagine a big part of that motivation is the fact that everything you attained last year, and knowing that they could come back as it is together, as it were, together to try to accomplish. I mean, you're number three seed in the NCAA tournament, close, but able to still see that goal in your sights there and have one more opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I got my my pooch here in the background. But they, without a doubt, I mean, anytime, you know, you can bring, not just bring those quality players and people back, but for them to come back and do it together, I think is something that was really appealing both to them. I mean, anytime, you know, you look at your roster and you have some great players like the four of them and our seniors that are just a year older. And I think everyone's been really excited here about the new players that we've been able to add to our roster. It's there's another opportunity right in front of us. And we know it's a long season. We know that as we talked about earlier, we're going to have to go through the ECAC, but we just want to keep focusing on getting better every single day and putting one foot in front of the other. And so far this group has been, really focused and really dialed in to just continuing to have a good day each and every day. And hopefully at the end, all those chips stack up in the best way possible for us.
And it would be remiss if we didn't mention, of course, with the mention with the Danielle with the 71 points and leading the nation last year. The hot start, one of your other seniors is off to the Czech native, Christina Kaltunikova, right. Is off to quite a start right now, just about unstoppable. And once again, pick your poison when you're trying to defend against your Colgate team.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch her play right now. And honestly, watch all of our players play, but Kalti's off to a great start, as you mentioned, and she had a big weekend this past weekend against Penn State. And truthfully, it's really a luxury for a coach to be able to kind of separate players like Kalti and Danielle and have a couple different, you know, big time weapons on both of those lines. And it goes far beyond those two lines, frankly. But you know, I think when you're the opposition and you're looking at the lineup that's coming through for the next games, you certainly have to pay attention to both of those two players. And if you don't, you know, they can be trouble. And so from a coaching standpoint, it's a luxury. We're just trying to put them in the best spots individually that they can be in to help our team succeed. And so far they've been off to a good start in a lot of ways. They've both been able to pick up where they left off from last year.
With this many experienced players back, Greg, I mean, a lot of options in terms of who's actually going to get the letters on the sweater. And I noticed that two are on the D court. We haven't talked about how strong this team is, how deep it is defensively. But you've got a couple of the players back there with Sydney Bard, who's a two-time captain. Allie Simpson also being elevated to captain as a fifth year.
Yeah, and Bernie, I can't say enough about those two leaders, captains, people, and players, frankly. I mean, what they bring to our team on a daily basis is something that you just can't replace. And to have them in their fifth year, so confident in who they are and what they bring to this team, it resonates through the group. Not only do we rely on them heavily, you know, in the biggest moments of the biggest games, but you know, just what they bring to our locker room. We do have a handful of younger defensemen on our team this year, very talented but younger, and really there couldn't be two better people for our young D corps to learn from. And you just know as a coach, we've been through this a number of years, but players like Allie and Sid and Danielle and Kalti, and the list goes on and on, but their impact here at Colgate and within our program, it carries on for years. And and it's because of who they are and what they do every day and the impact that they have on others. But it just starts with, I think, you know, the relationships that they're willing to build with their teammates and to bring them in and show them the way as we get off to a start of a new season here.
It's always difficult in college hockey to bring the young defensemen along. And I believe you've got three freshman defenders that are all getting acclimated and becoming part of the program and bringing something a little bit different to the table for you in terms of what they can provide for the team overall and to be part and to become impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. And such an important position, as you know, all three of the first years are getting some time here early and getting acclimated to the college game for defensemen, especially, you know, it can be a,
oh yeah,
a challenging transition. But, you know, Avery Pickering, somebody that stepped in right away and had a significant impact, playing with Allie for the most part. And then the other one that wasn't mentioned is Sid Morrow. Ohio State transfer. Really, it's been a seamless transition for Sid in that way. We really like our decor. We feel the depth there is something that maybe we didn't have a year ago. And, you know, when you look at how to keep this program evolving and keep our team improving, that was one of the areas we wanted to ensure that we had more depth in. And we like where we stand in that capacity at this point in the year. There's lots of room to keep getting better, but we like our depth at every position, and especially on the back end this year, that's for sure.
And coaches are often, it depends on how circumstances are dictated. You might have a goaltender that's going to carry you, that you're going to be riding along, or you might have a situation, as it seems like you do with it currently, once again, depth-wise, that you can have a split. And I know that you've been for the first couple of weeks of the season, being able to split time with Osborne and Murphy, two goaltenders.
I mean, talk about luxuries. I don't think, you know, from a coaching standpoint, it doesn't get much better than our situation in that, really. I mean, I haven't experienced anything like it, Bernie, in my time beyond the last few years here with Hannah and Kaylee. You know, this team, we believe in both of them equally. They've both done a tremendous job throughout their careers here, and we're seeing them at their best. You know, they're playing some great hockey together. They push each other. They're good friends beyond the rink. And I think, you know, that competitive spirit yet supportive nature of both of them, it helps our team in the best of ways. I mean, they both want to be in the net. There's no question about it, but incredibly supportive. And the trust from the coaching staff and the players is, you know, through and through for both of them, regardless of who's in the net. I mean, last year we were fortunate to be able to go, you know, back and forth with both players, both goaltenders throughout the year, right through the playoffs. And so far there's been no reason to do anything otherwise. So we'll see how the season plays out. We know they both want to be in the net. We know this is Kaylee's final year, and so but both of them are going to want to be there in the end, so we'll see how things play out, but we're really fortunate to be in the situation we are.
And it's I think a situation philosophically for coaches about scheduling and not being in a position to ever fear playing the best teams, competing against them. If you want to be one of the best teams, play the best teams. You get an opportunity to play them night in and night out in the ECAC, as we've talked about, running that gauntlet. But to have the challenge outside, what a series to begin the season in late September, to be able to get out of the gate, number four in the national polls. Oh, by the way, you bring Ohio State into Hamilton to the Class of 65 arena. And that series was just epic from all I gathered about the competitiveness of those two games with two of the elite teams in the country, two of the real brand name programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a real great weekend, I think, for hockey, for women's hockey. All in all, when you look back at it, I think, you know, in a few years from now, we'll be able to, you know, circle a few names that were on the ice that weekend, and they'll be doing some amazing things in our game, whether it's in pro or at the national level. A lot of great players on the ice, and you know, the series, it certainly, you know, it was what we expected it to be. It was a great series back and forth with two good teams going head to head. And why not start that way? I think, you know, when we've played teams, when we played Ohio or teams like that in the past, we've learned so much about ourselves. And regardless of the results of the weekend, you know, I think what it did is it helped us kind of prepare a roadmap for where we need to go and how we need to go about our business moving forward. And, you know, I think overall, if you were to ask if we would have taken the split, you know, back in August or July, I think we would take it. You know, we got out to a deficit there in night two, getting down two goals, but it showed a lot of character coming back and taking that second game to overtime. And so there's lots to learn on all fronts from a great series like that. But I think most importantly, we've got to continue to look internally and learn from that and keep growing. But I think it's a great challenge anytime you can go against, some of the country's best teams to start the year.
No doubt. And some last minute heroics with the game winner on night one, and then the late power play goal to tie it. I mean, that's those are those battle tested moments, Greg, that are going to, I think, bode well and pay some dividends for you when you come to March.
Yeah, you hope so. I mean, those are the situations we want to be in, Bernie. As you know, when you're able to get through them together, those moments of adversity, I think, you know, it instills this feeling of belief within your group. And, I think to be able to do it early on certainly feels like there's nothing that we can't accomplish together. And, just a great way to start the season all together. But, couldn't be happier with how it all played out. Results aside, I think we learned a lot. And as you said, though, I think, you know, those experiences will pay dividends down the road for us.
And followed up with, again, a Big Ten opponent with the sweep of Penn State last weekend. Another area of the game that sometimes comes a little bit slowly in terms of putting systems in at the beginning of the year and the amount of time that you have to spend on the special teams. Special teams are out of the gate very strong. We've already 7 power play goals already, and it looks like you're a perfect, 10 for 10 on the PK right now.
Yeah, it's been great. Again, we talk about luxuries with an older group, but one of them in the fact that we were able to return our top power play unit from a year ago, and so we were able to probably spend a little more time on that part of our game early on here, and pick up where we left off in a lot of ways. I think, you know, it's an exciting when you can return everybody. We have a good solid foundation of what we want to be and where we want to take it. And I think there's still some wrinkles that we can add to our power play as the year goes on. Our other unit is there's a few new faces. So they're finding their way and getting some reps along the road here. But I think our power play so far this year has been an important part of some early success. And our PK, Coach Walkland does such a tremendous job running our penalty kill. And, again, some new faces in that part of our game. But we're finding our way with every passing day a little bit more. And you just know as the season goes along and those games get closer, a power play or a penalty kill can be the difference. And so it's not something that we take lightly. And, as the year goes on, we'll continue to dive deeper into it. So it's a luxury, certainly, to have all those pieces. And we've got such a strong foundation that hopefully we can continue to build upon as the year goes on.
Mention assistant coach and also give you an opportunity, Greg, to talk about a new addition to your staff for this season.
Yeah, we're really thrilled. I mean, Stefan DeCoste and Chelsea Walkland have been a part of our program for a while. But as you mentioned, Bernie, Brianne Wilson Bennett is our newest assistant, graduating class of 2018. She was a captain on the team that went to our first Final Four and national championship game. She actually played a big part in that semifinal win against Wisconsin, scoring a hat trick in that game, and just a real competitor, someone who has a knack for coaching and development of players. And we couldn't be more thrilled to add somebody that, brings those things, but also, bleeds, maroon and cares deeply about Colgate and everything that our program is today. Her fingerprints are all over this program and our school, and what an asset for our young players to be able to look up to her and for her to have the opportunity to lead now in a coaching role. It's a dream come true to bring her back.
And then next up will be a non-conference series with Mercyhurst. Your thoughts getting ready to play Mercyhurst here for a pair?
Yeah, I think, Mercyhurst has been a team on our schedule for a long time now. I think every year that I've been at Colgate, we've played them. So a familiar opponent, in some ways feels like a league opponent.
Yeah.
because we see them every season. But Just incredibly well coached every year, disciplined, hardworking. And you know, we've played them early in the year and they always give us a great series. You know, it's not going to be easy against a team like Mercyhurst, but, and then they've played some close games against other league opponents so far this year too. So, it's an important non-conference series. As we try to explain to our players, like every game, is meaningful when it comes to trying to, you know, position yourself at the end of the year in the tournament. And this is another one that will be meaningful. Mercyhurst will certainly have the number of other good teams throughout the year. They'll certainly be at the top of the CHA when all the chips fall. And so it's an important non-conference series that we're excited to play and have another opportunity to play at home on Colgate Day, for that matter, October 13th. Oh, so okay. Looking forward to that.
And a well-earned bye before entering into ECAC play for you, Greg.
Yeah, looking forward to that too. I mean, in some ways it's hard to believe that we're nearing the middle of October. You know, been on the ice together since the end of August. So a weekend off will be great for everybody involved, both coaches and players. And we'll get a chance to recharge the batteries a little bit before heading straight into the ECAC gauntlet. So that'll be welcomed when that weekend arrives for sure.
Greg, thanks very much for joining us here this week, and all the best with you and the Raiders here as you get ready for the next step on the journey.
Outstanding, Bernie. Always a pleasure to be with you, and thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
Greg Fargo, our guest here this week on Inside ECAC Hockey.
Thank you for listening to the Inside ECAC Hockey podcast with Bernie Corbett. Follow ECAC Hockey on social media at ECAC Hockey across all platforms.